Hi, novel and short story writers. Welcome to our new edition on fiction writing. This is Jim Thayer. First, a mistake. A listener pointed out that I recently attributed one of my favorite novels, The Song of the Lark, to Edna Ferber. I had a brain synapse misfire. The Song of the Lark was written by Willa Cather. Edna Ferber and Willa Cather are both wonderful writers, and I just confused the two of them. I received a nice message and a good suggestion from Christoph in Antwerp. He wrote, "May I perhaps suggest a topic that you have hardly touched upon so far? Stories in the present tense seem to be more involving for the reader. But unless I'm much mistaken, most novels are written in the past tense. Could you perhaps explain why that is? Or do you have any tips on how to know whether we best use the present or past tense?" That's Christoph, and I'm glad for the suggestion. It's a good topic. The present tense refers to a style where events are described as if they're happening in the current moment, regardless of when the story is set. My research indicates there are 4 verb tenses in the present tense, but I didn't know that, and I don't think it's useful for us to know that unless we are professional grammarians. What we'll be talking about here, and what we'll be writing if we write a present tense novel, is the simple present tense. For us, our sentences are in the present tense when the sentence indicates things are happening in real time right now in front of the reader. "The wolf chases me" is a sentence written in the present tense. That sentence is in the first person. "The wolf chases him" is written in the present tense in the third person. The past tense is where events are described as having already occurred. The reader is looking back at them. They happened in the past. "The wolf chased me" is a sentence written in the past tense. Or if our story is written in the third person, "The wolf chased him." And that's written in the past tense. Some wonderful novels are written in the present tense. Listen to how these writers do it. This is from The Hunger Games by Suzanne Collins. These are the first sentences of the novel in the present tense. "When I wake up, the other side of the bed is cold. My fingers stretch out, seeking Prim's warmth, but finding only the rough canvas cover of the mattress. She just had bad dreams and climbed in with our mother. Of course she did. This is the day of the reaping. I prop myself up on one window. There's enough light in the bedroom to see them." Hear the present tense, "when I wake up" instead of "when I woke up." Here is from the wonderful novel by Sarah Gruen, From Water for the title is Water for Elephants. Listen to her write in the present tense. "When I wake up, the train has stopped. Can I really have slept through the screeching brakes? The sun is shining on me through the window, and my brain pounds against my skull. My eyes ache, and my mouth tastes like a sewer. I stagger to my feet and glance into the bedroom. August is curled around Marlena, his arm lying across her. They are on top of the bedspread, still fully dressed. I get a few odd looks when I emerge from car 48, dressed in a tux with my other clothes tucked under my arm." Hear the present tense there. "I stagger to my feet." Had it been written in the past tense, of course it had been "I staggered to my feet." Some of Charles Dickens's Bleak House is written in the present tense. "I have a great deal of difficulty in beginning to write my portion of these pages, for I know I am not clever." That's Charles Dickens. How about one of my favorite novels? This is by Aaron Morgenstern, The Night Circus. Listen to the present tense. "After a few minutes, the door fades into the wall of the tent, invisible once more. The man's gaze does not waver. He does not so much as glance at the vanishing door. A moment later, Celia is sitting in a chair across the circle from him." Hear the present tense there. The door fades, as opposed to the past tense, which would have been the door faded. My impression is that present tense novels have become a little more common lately, especially in young adult and literary novels, and maybe thrillers. But past tense remains the main tense for most novels across all genres. The percentage of novels written in the present tense, I looked and looked online, and there's a suggestion that 10 to 20% of novels are written in the present tense. I think it's probably closer to 10%. Why are so few novels written in the present tense? I know this begs the question, but the answer must be that readers like the past tense better. They are more comfortable with it, more accustomed to it, and so publishers try to meet that need. They publish far more past tense novels than present tense novels. Why might we write in the present tense? According to the sources I can find, the main reason is that the present tense makes the story seem more immediate. The story is happening right now, not in the past. It is unfolding in real time right in front of the reader. The reader may find a present tense story more engaging than a past tense story. He staggers to the bar, seems more immediate than he staggered to the bar. Some sources suggest other reasons that favor writing in the present tense, though I find them less convincing. I've read that having a character relate things in a stream of consciousness way is easier in the present tense. My first thought on reading that was to be wary of the stream of consciousness. Writing that way, irrespective of the tense. When trying to write stream of consciousness, it's too easy to get sloppy. Another advantage I read about is for the benefit of the writer. It might be more exciting for the writer to set out scenes if happening right now. I'm not convinced by this. I'm equally excited, irrespective of tenses I'm writing or reading. While present tense offers a unique reading experience, past tense remains the main choice for fiction due to several advantages. One advantage of writing in the past tense is that the readers are most familiar with past tense writing. Readers pick up a past tense novel and begin reading, and they don't think about tenses. A second advantage is that writing in the past tense may offer more time flexibility in our story. It's easier to jump back and forth in time when a story is written in the past tense. It's easier to manipulate time in the past tense. Another advantage of past tense is that it can create a sense of objectivity and distance between the reader and the story. Some stories might be better told if the reader has a sense that it isn't happening right in front of her face. Maybe crimes in fiction. Another advantage of writing in the past tense is that some voices might be easier to write in the past tense. For example, some stories, such as some thrillers and detective novels, are written in what's called a cool voice. And a cool voice is easier to write in the past tense. A voice is cool where the writer intentionally does not go deeply or at length into the viewpoint character's thoughts or feelings. A cool voice tends to make the story more cerebral, chillier, and more tightly written, maybe. It's often used in thrillers and police procedurals and detective stories. It's hard to do this, to do a cool voice in the present tense, and much easier in the past tense. Another advantage of past tense might be that it's easier to avoid trivial things because it may be easier to avoid a strict chronology of things, one after another, some of them trivial and of no moment to the story. So there are pluses for both present and past tense, and there are minuses, which are usually the mirror image of the pluses. My experience as a reader, though, and maybe yours is too, is that after a couple pages of starting the novel, I'm no longer paying attention to anything, to the tense at all. I'm paying attention to the story. When thinking about this subject for this podcast, I had to research to find novels written in the present tense. Water for Elephants and Night Circus are among my favorite novels, and I well remember the stories and characters, but I had forgotten entirely that they were written in the present tense. Same with Dickens's Bleak House, which I had researched for my own present novel. The tense became invisible to me, nothing to remember, so it must not have been important to my reading experience. Let me suggest that we pay attention to the market. The big majority of novels are written in the past tense. There's a reason for that. I don't know what that reason is, really, but it must be considerable. So if you are considering writing your novel in the present tense, have a good reason to do so in the present tense. Our default probably should be writing our story in the past tense. How did Ayn Rand work? I think she pronounced her first name so that it rhymes with mine. Ayn Rand. I'm not too sure about that. Maybe it's Ayn Rand. I've been enjoying Mason Curry's book Daily Rituals, as you know, where he sets out how creators worked. Not only writers, but also artists such as Jackson Pollock and scientists such as Albert Einstein and composers like Sergei Rachmaninoff and cartoonists like Charles Schulz of Peanuts. I've been mentioning Mason Curry's book, How Writers Work, and here's how Ayn Rand worked from Mason Curry's book. In 1942, under pressure to finish what would become her breakthrough novel, The Fountainhead, Rand turned to a doctor to help her overcome her chronic fatigue. He prescribed Benzedrine, still a relatively new drug at the time, to boost her energy levels. It did the trick. According to the biographer Anne C. Heller, Rand had spent years planning and composing the first third of her novel. Over the next 12 months, fueled by Benzedrine pills, she averaged a chapter a week. Her writing routine during this period was grueling. She wrote day and night, sometimes neglecting to go to bed for days. She took naps on the couch in her clothes instead. At one point, she worked for 30 hours straight, pausing only to eat the meals prepared by her husband and to read him a new passage and discuss bits of dialogue. Even when she got stuck, Rand stayed at her desk. A typist who later worked for Rand recalled her habits. This is the typist. She was very disciplined. She seldom left her desk. If she had a problem with the writing, if she had what she called the squirms, she solved the problem at her desk. She didn't get up and pace around the apartment or wait for inspiration, or turn on the radio or television. She wasn't writing every minute. Once I heard a flapping sound coming from the study, she was playing solitaire. She might read the newspaper. At times, I entered the study to find her sitting with her elbows on the desk and resting her chin on her hands, looking out the window, smoking, and thinking. Mason Curry continues, the Benzedrine helped Rand push through the last stages of the Fountainhead, but it soon became a crutch. She would continue to use amphetamines for the next three decades, even as her overuse led to mood swings, irritability, emotional outbursts, and paranoia, traits Rand was susceptible to even without drugs. That's Mason Curry on Ayn Rand. That's not how I work, and I hope that's not how you work either. I just finished a terrific coming-of-age novel. The protagonist is 12, going on 13, and she deals with her friends, both boys and girls, and her parents and her little brother, who is a genius. I liked the characters and the dialogue was sharp and it was funny, a pleasure to read. There is an element missing from the novel which leaped out at me, and I'm not going to name the novel as it's not my role in life to criticize a good writer who has written a good novel, and especially knowing that those who live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. Wait, I'm confusing myself with someone who is noble. The name of the novel is You Are So Not Invited to My Bat Mitzvah, and the author is Fiona Rosenblum. I really enjoyed the novel, and the author is a terrific writer. The novel was a pleasure to read, and I laughed out loud several times, and it reminded me of one of my favorite novels, The Diary of Adrian Mole, aged 13 and three quarters, and that's high praise indeed. But I would have done something differently. A scene in the story involves boys and girls climbing up to a rock quarry, and some of them jumping in for a swim. It's a good scene, except there is utterly no description of the setting. A rock quarry is an interesting, maybe an evocative place. Remember the quarry in the movie Breaking Away? The novel mentions only climbing the rock face with no description of it, and a mention of the flat rock from which they jump with no description of it, and there's no description of the water or the quarry walls or foliage around the lip of the quarry or the sky overhead. As you know, a setting is the location where a scene takes place. A setting is the, quote, backdrop against which your characters perform, says Helen Hockiness. It's the ground on which the characters stand, whether it's a city or a forest, a desert, or it's a veterinarian surgery or the fashion runway or the library or a living room. Here, it's in this novel, it's a rock quarry. Donald Moss notes the importance of setting. This is Donald Moss. The great novelists of the past and the breakout novelists of today employ many approaches to setting, but all have one element in common: detail. A setting cannot live unless it's observed in its pieces and particulars. A place is the sum of its parts. In this novel, I enjoyed the rock quarry scene. There's no description of it, not even the distance between the flat rock and the surface of the water, or of the size of the quarry pond. Without a setting description, a scene feels floating, not attached to the ground, and I had that feeling as I read this scene. Something like this would have worked, just a few sentences. The quarry's pond was the size of a football field and more rectangular than round. The rock sides were 50 feet tall, from water to lip, and visible on the walls were the striations of the dynamite blast holes. The rock was tan, the color of my cocker spaniel. Across the quarry, on an old dirt approach road, was an excavator with a front loader bucket on the ground, the entire thing rusted to red. A breeze rattled boughs behind me at the edge of the diving rock, and a scrub jay rattled from a tree. The sun was setting, throwing our shadows behind us. This would have been enough to give the reader an image and to plant the characters on the ground. Is it my way or the highway? No. The writer here, Fiona Rosenblum, might argue, and it's a defensible argument, that the first-person protagonist is 12 years old, is intensely involved in her friends. Her closest girlfriends are there, as is the boy she loves, or thinks she loves. The protagonist is totally immersed in her own thoughts, her own emotions, and isn't thinking about the rock quarry, so why would the reader be thinking about the rock quarry? The protagonist's horizon at the moment is short, too short to even be aware of the setting. So the reader, being deprived of a setting description, comports with the protagonist's thoughts. It's a good argument. Not enough to convince me, though, because I think the setting should be described in almost all situations. We should give the reader something to look at other than the characters. We should fill the reader's eye. My new novel, Fagin and Miss Havisham, has been released and is available at Amazon. The novel takes place in London in the 1820s. and its characters are Charles Dickens's famous characters from many of his novels. Fagin and Bill Sykes from Oliver Twist, Miss Havisham from Great Expectations, Murdstone from David Copperfield, and many others. They are younger than in Dickens's novels, and I toss them all together to see what happens. The publisher is Creative Texts, an independent publisher and a good one, and I'm delighted. I had huge fun researching and writing the novel. I tried to take readers back to London 200 years ago, and I hope you'll consider getting a print or ebook copy. Soon the Audible version will be released. I've heard snippets of it, and it's just terrific. The voice actor is wonderful. You'll be able to see whether I can actually do the writing techniques we talk about in these episodes. The title, again, is Fagin and Miss Havisham. Thank you. I want to mention persistence. And this comment is for all of us writers, but particularly short story writers. My wife Patty and I were on the island of Cyprus in the Mediterranean a while ago. As we drove along the coast road, our guide pointed out an offshore boulder formation called Aphrodite's Rock. It was as big as a building, with foaming waves hitting its base. Legend has it, if you swim three times around the dangerous rock, the Greek goddess of love, Aphrodite, will appear to you. This notion seized me as I sat there in the van, and I had a story worked out in my head within the next half hour by the time we reached the Limassol ruins on Cyprus. When I got home to Seattle, I wrote the story. It's 5,000 words, about 16 typed pages, and it took me about 5 hours to write. It's a fantasy story. I'd never before written a short story, not counting a one-page story in high school, and never before written fantasy. To get my fantasy short story published, I researched science fiction fantasy online publishers, and there are a lot of them. Forgive the immodesty. I knew I could write, so I didn't worry about that. I thought the story, titled My Stupid Swim Around Aphrodite's Rock, was, again, pardon the immodesty, I thought it was engaging, maybe charming. I knew to make multiple simultaneous submissions, and so I did. Over the course of some weeks, I submitted the story to, get out your calculator, 29 publishers. Some of the online magazines sent email rejections, some simply never contacted me. I received an acceptance. It's from a good online science fiction and fantasy publisher called Another Realm, and judging from some of the stories I've now read at their site, they have really good writers working there. Another Realm pays writers, which most online magazines do not. It's a small amount. The story will appear next month. I'll let you know when it's online, hoping you'll read it. The online magazine is free to read. As I mentioned, I spent 5 hours writing a story, and I spent maybe 25 hours searching for online magazines and sending submissions. It's not a sustainable business model. But if we love to write and want to get our voice out there, it's what we do. After writing and teaching for a long time, I already knew these lessons about submitting to publishers, and I was reminded of them regarding the short story I wrote. And let me mention them. These lessons are, 1, make multiple simultaneous submissions, whether you have a short story or a novel. These days, most publishers don't dare to ask for exclusive submissions, but some do, and if they do, ignore it. 2, don't let rejections dispirit you. Easy to say, hard to do, I know. I've had quite a few acceptances in my writing life, but also quite a few rejections. At this stage in my career and life, rejections to me are water off a duck's back. I no longer even bother to shrug when I get a rejection. They are simply an entry in an Excel submission spreadsheet on my laptop. 3, don't give up. Novelist Kevin J. Anderson says, persistence is much more important than raw talent. Most aspiring writers give up long before their chance arrives. That's Kevin J. Anderson. In 1943, the unknown but soon to be legendary sci-fi writer Ray Bradbury wrote, and this is Ray Bradbury, "My average is one sale out of every three stories." He later estimated having received more than 2,000 rejections. If he can withstand rejections, so can we. As a writer, the only time you know you have failed is when you give up. Make those submissions, a lot of them. Shrug off rejections. Finding a publisher is like looking for your lost car keys. It'll be in the last place you look, so keep looking. If you'd like to send me a message, my address is jimthayerseattle@gmail.com. Until next time, this is Jim Thayer. Please make a lot of multiple submissions and keep tapping those keys.